Dear friends, it is with great pleasure that we meet together to continue our study of this central section of the Book of Revelation, the woman and the dragon. We have already seen the first character, the woman, representing the people of God, which is, in this case, a faithful woman clothed with the sun. We'll see others which are far from being brilliant. Now, I propose we focus our study on the dragon. So, let's see what it could be, and let's read Revelation chapter 12, verses 3 and 4.
Apocalypse 12, les versets 3 et 4.
And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns, and seven diadems on his head. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as it was born. The dragon. We need not have to look very far to know who this dragon is. The text itself discloses the secret a little further in chapter 12, verse 9. So, the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceived the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. He is Satan. He is the old serpent, you know, this serpent who seduced Eve in the Garden of Eden. It is this one, the serpent of old, the devil, Satan. He is given all sorts of names, but he is well identified. Now, we may realize something else, another identification. For this dragon will seek to destroy the Son, that is the Messiah. Who has sought to destroy the Messiah since his birth, as soon as the woman would give birth? Well, you know the story. Herod, King Herod, fearing for his own kingdom, the king who murdered several of his sons, murdered his wife, was now seeking to murder the Messiah. Of course, there is nothing spiritual about this king. But let's read what he did in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 2, verse 16. Then Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceeding angry, and he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in all its districts, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men. Indeed, Herod received the Magi. Those wise men came innocently and gave account of their mission. They had seen a star in the sky. They came to see this amazing character who was announced. They came to see Jesus. They had brought gifts with them, and Herod, knowing that it was for the king of the Jews, asked them for more precision. It is more likely that they saw the star 2 years ago, Perhaps had they started their journey since then? And Herod, to be sure not to miss his goal, would have all children of 2 years old and under be killed. Thus, Herod was inspired by Satan. And one can say that behind Herod, Satan was the one hiding. Therefore, if at first we said that Satan is represented by the dragon, we can also say that Herod himself represented the Roman Empire. No doubt you know that Herod went to Rome to have his kingship confirmed. Holding his kinship from the Roman Empire, he thus was a representative of the Roman Empire. So we have here a double identity. Each time we'll see in the book of Revelation a beast with seven heads and ten horns, we can say, seven heads and ten horns? I know, it's Satan. But behind or before, what mask is Satan wearing? Or behind which institution or human character is he hiding? I invite you to look at those texts, remembering that a beast with seven heads and ten horns is a known figure in Greek mythology. Indeed, it was the Hydra of Lerna. So one of the 12 labors of Hercules consisted of defeating this mythical and monstrous animal. This task he actually succeeded brilliantly. You see, the concept of evil was perfectly represented by this mythical animal. For this animal had this particularity. When one of its head was cut off, two others would regrow to replace it. Isn't it an amazing image of evil? You struggle against it, you think you have overcome, you've driven it away, but it reappears in another form, and sometimes in several forms. The new growth of its head made of this animal a scarecrow, a great scarecrow. And its mere presence causes fear. Image of evil? Certainly. Therefore, image of Satan. So, we must not be surprised if John borrowed from Greek mythology a symbol as strong and powerful as this. The notion of the heads brings forth another idea, that of Satan taking different forms. And so, he will reveal himself here in the form of the Roman Empire, more precisely through Herod, and later in other forms. Let me invite you to read with me what we find at the beginning of chapter 13 of the book of Revelation. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Again, a beast with seven heads and ten horns. We can already say that it is Satan. Yes, it is Satan indeed. But note that the mask is a little different. He is not presented as a dragon, but as a beast. The crowns or diadems, as the Greek puts it, are no longer on the heads. They are on the horns. And even though there are variations, yet it is still Satan. This is another institution, but it is still Satan. So, in each case, we'll have to look for a double identity. Same thing when we approach chapter 17, verse 3, where we see the following, an unfaithful woman, a prostitute who sits on a beast. Let's read it. So, he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Here is a new face of Satan. But what about the diadems? Diadems are signs of royalty. It is different from the crown. In the original language, the Greek word used in the text is diadema, whereas the crown would be translated Stephanos. The crown is a symbol of victory, the diadem a symbol of royalty, political power, and in this case, the diadems are on the heads. So, we'll see what this means. In Revelation 17, where the beast is being described, we are given more accurate details, including the meaning of the heads. It is a rather complicated passage, because we are given two explanations for the same symbol. For now, let us just keep the first explanation. And when we'll come to study chapter 17, we shall consider the second explanation. Revelation chapter 17, verse 9. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. Let us leave aside for a while the explanation of the seven kings. Let's deal with the seven mountains. When we talk about the city of seven hills till today, we are well aware that it is Rome. And in John's time, it was even more obvious. So, talking about the diadems or crowns are on the seven mountains, it is easy to say that power, royal power, political power is Rome. Therefore, we are here in a Roman political system of which Herod was only one instrument, one of the poles. Now, let's look at a second characteristic of this dragon. It has a tail. And this tail drew the stars of heaven. We read this text in the book of Revelation, chapter 12, verse 4. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth. What does drawing the third of the stars of heaven with his tail mean? In chapter 1, we saw that the stars represented the angels, and the crown of stars of the woman evoked probably something else, perhaps the 12 tribes or the 12 apostles. Anyway, these stars represent messengers. Whether they be heavenly messengers, like the angels, or terrestrial messengers, like the apostles, they are still messengers. And in Greek, angelos, which is translated as angel, actually means messenger. The gospel is good news, and the angelos is the one who transmits news. Therefore, there is no contradiction in these close meanings. So, if we keep in mind that the stars are angels, what does it mean? The dragon drew them with his tail. First, let's confirm that these stars do represent angels. We see this in Revelation chapter 1, verse 20. It is in the opening vision. Jesus, who is walking among the seven golden candlesticks, holds the seven stars. Let's read. The mystery of the seven stars, which you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden lampstands. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven lampstands which you saw are the seven churches. Therefore, these are angels. So, what does it mean? He drew them with his tail. Well, we have already seen the meaning of the tail. The tail is what you do not expect, something that arrives after, from behind. It represents lies, the kind of lie that will also take you unexpectedly and send you where you do not want to go or be. The prophet Isaiah gives us a clear definition. We have already read this text, but let's read it again because it is important. In the book of the prophet Isaiah, chapter 9, verse 14, depending on the version, it is either verse 14 or 15, we read, "The elder and honorable, he is the head. The prophet who teaches lie, he is the tail." The prophet who teaches lies. He who speaks from God is indeed a prophet. But in this case, he who claims to speak on behalf of God but does not is a liar. And here, through his lies to the angels, Satan drives them in an adventure which will turn out to be their downfall. Let's read this just a little further in Revelation, still in chapter 12, verse 9. We have already seen this text, but we look at it now from another angle. Revelation 12, verse 9. "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast out to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." It is through lies that he pulled them down with him. So here, he is standing before the woman. This is the story of Herod. This is the story we read, which we call the slaughter of the innocents. And we must try to go a little further to understand. Satan can be defeated. When we read that he drew the angels with him, he took them in an adventure that causes their loss. But the very moment he drew them with him was at the time of the cross. In fact, let's read it in verse 10. Revelation chapter 12, verse 10. "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, 'Now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come.'" No place was found for Satan in heaven anymore. He has no possibility of convincing anyone there. And if Satan is cast out, it is in fact he has no one to see and share with. When we read the story of Job, we see Satan standing in the middle of the sons of God and talking with God. However, the debate takes a dramatic turn because Satan works things out in such a way that he presents Job as someone fragile, someone who acts out of interest, and God will be obliged to demonstrate that this is not the case. He will allow appalling disasters strike Job. Sometimes we have a hard time understanding that. But Satan, in the text before us, is presented as the accuser of the brethren. And behind the charge laid on men, it is a charge against God himself. For he says, "See, man does not do this, does not do that, he fails to obey your law." And in parenthesis, "If he keeps disobeying your law, it is because you have set the standard too high and have put man in an impossible situation." Easy to say for Satan. However, when comes Jesus, when comes the sacrifice of Jesus, Satan cannot say that this man has sinned and that he bears the salary of his own sin. At that point, justice is proclaimed loud and clear, while injustice is clearly revealed to one and all. The justice of God is revealed to one and all, and Satan's injustice becomes public as well. And victory, that victory won by Christ, is the victory that reveals to all the angels what was at stake. And this victory won in heaven could be considered as a personal victory as well. When Jesus sent his disciples in various areas of Galilee, the latter related their experience to him. Demons were cast out, the people were healed, many discovered that truth and recognized the Messiah as such. Jesus told them, "I saw Satan fall from heaven." Satan can fall. Actually, he fell from heaven at the time of the cross. He falls each time a heart surrenders to Jesus. Each time someone trusts in God, Satan falls. Satan falls each time a heart is set free from his snares. And anyone who dedicates himself to God is someone who is free from the enemy's bondage. So, don't you think that this victory is made possible in your life? Can't we, in our lives, win this victory? This is not a victory with sword. It is a victory that simply consists in surrendering to Jesus. Then, Satan has no place in the heart. He is fallen.